You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is April the 1st, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, it's April Fool's Day, and I haven't actually seen any April Fool's jokes this morning. Since this is going out after 12 o'clock, I won't be playing any pranks on you either. And the content that we do have here at Radio Albion, I mean, we do check it stringently to make sure that it's as accurate as we can find. We wouldn't want to be putting out false information or ever get accused of fake news here. As I did yesterday, I'd like to remind people that it's a perfect time to be sharing Radio Albion content with your friends. Of course, first, make sure they're not the sort of people that are likely to be offended by any of our content. The last thing we want to do is offend people. But we do have plenty of historical podcasts that aren't determined by the time. They're not sort of reliant on the news that's just come out. They're not current affairs. We have a lot of historical content, particularly on British history. So do share the content out amongst other nationalists, and do remember to send us donations if you're able to afford them. It is a good time to be buying Bitcoin, but of course I am aware a lot of people are short for money at the moment. Well, again, unfortunately, all I can really talk about today is Corona related. That seems to be all there is in the news. I'm sure Grandpa Lampshade is going to have a problem coming up with the topic for Friday, a nice light-hearted topic for Friday, because there just aren't any light-hearted topics around, unfortunately. One thing I have noticed, rather embarrassing for Britain, is because on the television they've had to resort to interviewing people over the internet rather than having people in the studio, it's really highlighted the dreadful quality of the internet in Britain. Apparently we have 95% of the country covered by 3G internet, yet you wouldn't believe it from what you see on the BBC. They keep interviewing these celebrity types, and of course most of them live in the country, and in the rural areas the internet is absolutely dreadful. You've got people that can't hear what's going on. You've got the picture stopping. It's just a total embarrassment for Britain, basically. It's okay in the cities. They're okay. I mean, what they should do is they should just put 3G masks up everywhere, not 5G ones, just 3G ones would be good enough for people in the country. I mean, they have that in Finland and it's all free. So why don't they do that over here and give us free internet? Well, I see our role here really as trying to reassure people that things are okay. I know it's an awkward time for people because nothing's certain. Nobody knows what's going to be happening in the next few months. And that can be quite worrying for people. And I think one thing that people can look at with certainty is to look at the outbreak in China, look at the outbreak in Wuhan, which was absolutely terrible when it happened, and they were able to clear it up within 3 months. So I would suggest that in Britain, we will probably be sort of going back to normal within 3 months. I would have thought round about June, maybe the end of June, maybe before. And also because since this broke out in Wuhan in back in November, there's been a lot of work on coming up with antivirals and vaccines and all the rest of it. And of course, the results of those tests will then be available. You know, we might even have a vaccine within 3 months. There's a lot of disinformation out there. I know that is a rather mainstream view to take, that there is a lot of disinformation out there. But there is, even amongst the nationalist sites, there are people that are conspiracy prone, that are saying things like, oh, well, this is just the flu. It's no worse than the flu. It is a lot worse than the flu. When we were looking at the images back from when it broke out in China, you could see that there were people dropping down dead in the streets. There were people having seizures. It affects the organs. I talked about all the different ways that it affects the body. A while back, we had Jason Coney just last week on Patriotic Weekly Review was talking about a friend of his who's had his organs damaged by this. And Hunter Wallace over at Occidental Dissent, he has actually looked up some statistics to show that this isn't just the flu. He says there wasn't a single week in New York State in the 2018 to 2019 flu season when deaths from influenza and pneumonia exceeded 200. Just 200. A year ago this week, 16 people in New York State died of the flu and 161 died of pneumonia. 965 people have died in New York State, mostly in the last week, just from the coronavirus. Coronavirus is severe viral pneumonia, and pneumonia is always far more deadly than influenza. In the worst flu season in recent years, 63 people died in a week in New York State from influenza, and 243 died from pneumonia, which at the very peak was about 9 a day from influenza and 34 a day from pneumonia. In the week that ended on January the 20th, 2018, in the middle of a brutal winter that was, the flu and pneumonia accounted for 9.8% of all deaths that week. The absolute worst that it gets is slightly below 300 deaths in a week. Since last night, New York State has reported 253 new deaths just in that day, and the day isn't over yet. There will be another update from New York this evening. The medical system can easily handle flu and pneumonia deaths, which are seasonal and peak and follow a familiar, predictable curve. Homicides are also seasonal and follow a familiar, predictable curve. This is not anything like the flu. 253 people just don't die in 12 hours in New York State from influenza. So that's the actual figures there. So we can see that it's a lot worse than the flu. So the people that are telling you that, oh, this is just the flu, and not enough people are dying from this to make it a concern, are just not really looking at the statistics, are they? Or they're just exaggerating, or they're just trying to say something different to everybody else. Now, unfortunately, we've had some confirmation of something that I've been saying for quite a while. I think most nationalists picked up on this, and that is about the asymptomatic transmission through the air. Now, when this first happened, way back in November or December, the Chinese let us know that all the fish in the fish tanks in Wuhan market tested positive for coronavirus. Now, how could that be? All those fish were in separate fish tanks, and they were in the water. So how did they manage to get this virus? Well, I would suggest the only way they could have got that virus is from the air, from the air pumps, which means that it must have been hanging around in the air. We knew this back in November. We've also been told that people that are asymptomatic can infect others. And if you're asymptomatic, that means that you don't have a cough or a cold, you don't have sneezes. So if you can still infect people when you don't have a cough or a cold, then it has to be that it's just coming out in the air that people breathe. This is why you need a mask. This is why you need an FFP3 mask, which is what Red Ice have been saying way back since November. And of course, the WHO have said, oh, no, you don't need masks. Public don't need masks. It's just the medical workers that need masks, and they can get by with a surgical mask, is what they've been saying all this time. But the evidence tells us that is not so. And now there's actually a study that has been done that proves this. It's called Transmission Potential of SARS-CoV-2 in Viral Shedding Observed at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Now, I pulled out some of the more important quotes from this study because it's a 12 or 14 page scientific study. And they say the air samples themselves had SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus contamination. And that's obviously the most important thing from this. It shows that the air itself, if you have patients in a room, it's just going to be in the air itself, which means that really you don't just need masks, you need goggles as well. I mean, I would be advising people that are going to the supermarket to be wearing a mask at the very least, and gloves. And when you get your stuff and you take it home, you should not really touch it for another couple of days, because it lasts 24 hours, I think it is, on cardboard and plastic and other surfaces. It can last for about 3 days. So of course you could wipe your stuff down with your mail. You can just leave your mail there for a couple of days before you open it, and that should ensure that the virus is gone. Of course, we don't know if the virus is actually active. We know that it's there, but we don't know if it can still infect you after that time. Continuing with this study, taken together, this data indicates significant environmental contamination in rooms where patients infected with SARS-CoV-2 are housed and cared for, regardless of the degree of symptoms or acuity of illness. So what they're saying there is, if you're not coughing, if you're not sneezing, the room that you're in, if you have this coronavirus, the environment will still have significant contamination. And they're not just talking about surfaces here, they're talking about the air as well. It is interesting to note the presence of viral RNA on the floor under the bed of the patients and on the window ledges, which were not obviously used by the patient in the hospital NBU. Airflow in the NBU suites enters from the top center of the room and exits at grates near the head of the 20 patients' bed on either side of the room. So it moves around the room and it can obviously travel through the airflow. And this is how all the people on that cruise liner, this is how they all became infected. There was a cruiser a while back, and I think two or three people tested positive, and so they said, well, we'll just have to quarantine everybody on that ship. And everybody on the ship got the coronavirus, and that was obviously through the air being breathed out and being pumped around and recycled. And I believe it was something like 1% or less than 1% on that ship that actually died of the virus, which tells us that it's not as deadly as we think it is. But the reason why they're saying, well, in Italy it's 10%, and I mean, it varies in whatever country, but that is because they're measuring the number of deaths with the number of people that have been tested. And because in this cruiser, everybody was tested, everybody, there wasn't anybody else that weren't tested, then you get this low result of just 1%. And when they're testing people in the various countries that have it, they're basically testing people that are saying, well, I feel ill, can I have a test? They're not testing everybody that's been around the person that's actually got it. So that's probably a more accurate death rate, is the 1%. But what they've done now is they've shown that it does travel around the room. In the few instances where the distance between individuals in isolation and air sampling could be confidently maintained at greater than 6 foot, two of the three air samples were positive for viral RNA. So what that is telling us is that this 2 meter distance is not good enough. Now, there was also a report a while back of people that were sat on the front seat of a minibus 4 meters away from somebody who was sitting on the back seat of the minibus, and they caught the virus from them. Now, the person that was on the back seat of the minibus did have a bit of a cough and they were sneezing. And sneezes can apparently travel 8 meters. So really, this 2 meters distance rule, really, it needs to be more than that if you want to be certain. And what they're saying here is, even at distances more than 2 meters away, the air itself is still going to be positive for coronavirus if there is somebody there that has that. 66.7% of hallway air samples indicate that virus-containing particles were being transported from the rooms and into the hallway during sampling activities. So it was even getting out of the rooms that contained these patients. Finally, personal air samplers worn by sampling personnel were all positive for SARS-CoV-2, despite the absence of a cough by most patients while the sampling personnel were present. So they were going in to take these samples when the patients weren't coughing. And yet, it's still registered positive. The results turned negative after the patient's number reduced and rigorous sanitation was implemented. So obviously once you get less of these people in a room, there's going to be less of this virus. I mean, it may be that if you've got a large room, like something like a supermarket, and you've just got one person that walks around, that the amount of virus that's actually in there may not be enough to infect somebody. We just don't know what the amount that is required to infect somebody. I guess that's part of the studies that they're doing at the moment in London, where they have paid people to become infected with this. I would imagine that they've all been given a varying dose so that they can work out just how much is required before somebody actually becomes properly infected by it. They say the PUA had undetectable airborne SARS-CoV-2 concentration, but it obviously increased with accumulating crowd flow. So again, it's just confirming that. Now, they have got some positive conclusions from this, because you could be thinking, well, this is terrible. This is airborne. What can we do to avoid this? Well, their conclusions are that room ventilation, open space, proper use and disinfection of the toilet can effectively limit aerosol transmission of SARS-CoV-2. And I was saying this a while back, what we need to have is windows open. This is why in the summer it will be better, because people will be able to have their rooms open. This study also showed that people can become infected from using the same toilet, because you can shed the virus in your waste products as well. So toilets need to be properly cleaned. They say gathering of crowds with asymptomatic carriers is a potential source of airborne SARS-CoV-2. The virus aerosol deposition on protective apparel or floor surface and their subsequent resuspension is a potential transmission pathway, and effective sanitation is critical in minimizing the aerosol transmission of SARS-CoV-2. So you need to be careful of the protective clothing that you're wearing out. But the really good news about this is that none of the people that were actually taking these samples became infected. And the reason why they didn't become infected is because they were wearing FFP3 masks and gloves. So because they had these masks that the government and the World Health Organization are telling us we don't need to be wearing, because these people that were taking these tests, because they were wearing those masks, none of them became contaminated with this. So this is what we need. We need FFP3 masks, and unfortunately, because the government was negligent and didn't stock up on them in January, they've basically told all the public providers of these masks that they can only provide them to the NHS. So the general members of public having to pay £35 or more on eBay in order to buy these masks, which should be available to the public. Again, because if the public had these masks and were wearing them out, then that would soon prevent there being any more people being infected. I mean, this study proves that. The people that were in this virus-rich atmosphere with 20 people that were breathing out this coronavirus, shedding the virus everywhere, all the people that went in there wearing masks were not infected. So obviously this is the solution. This is why Japan doesn't have such a problem with it. This is why South Korea is getting on top of it. And this is why those Asian countries are advising people to wear masks. Because, it will prevent this. It's ridiculous that they're still telling us that we shouldn't be wearing masks. And obviously, it's only this particular type of mask that is going to protect you. FFP3, it's called. Well, as I talked about earlier in the week, or maybe last week, actually, in one of these podcasts that are concentrated on coronavirus, we've got a particular problem with the migrant communities across Europe ignoring the advice and refusing to go into quarantine, and the police are just deciding that in the interests of community cohesion, we have to just let them get away with it. And in Sweden, they've gone one step further, of course. The migrants, that is. Authorities in the Swedish municipality of Eslöv have warned residents that teenagers are knowingly coughing, sneezing, and spitting besides the elderly in a so-called coronavirus challenge. Parents have been advised to talk with their children after a number of reports of targeted unsavory and unsanitary behaviour by the local youth against the elderly. Sweden has opted not to impose restrictions on the freedom of movement of its citizens, contrary to most other countries. And it'd be interesting to see just how the numbers shoot up in Sweden, because by doing that, they are effectively a control country in this big experiment that is going on. But this is horrific, to think that these teenagers are deliberately trying to infect the elderly. And of course, they're not doing it to their own elderly. Doesn't tell us what the ethnicity is of these teens here, but I think we can guess, judging by the behaviour of what's going on, as I said, in France and elsewhere. Universities and high schools have shut, meaning a bored youth is apparently looking to entertain itself at the expense of the elderly. Some of our elders have been exposed to youths knowingly coughing, sneezing, and spitting in their vicinity in the streets and in stores. Talk to your youth, and above all, respond if you see someone out to provoke and behave disrespectfully, Eslöv Municipality wrote on Facebook. And of course, we know that youth is usually a euphemism for young migrants. Many people online call the behaviour disgusting and absolutely senseless, though some accuse the municipality of spreading fake news from racists, and that young people was a code word for something entirely different. So what are they saying there? I mean, it's obviously not fake news if it's coming from the municipality. It is obviously truthful. And what they're saying is that the municipality shouldn't be telling us this news because it's racist to be telling us this. So this is basically confirming that the young people, the youths involved in this, are migrant youths. It has come to our knowledge that older people feel insecure, that young people cough and shout Corona, only to walk away and laugh, Ingrid Westerlund, the head of operations at Eslöv Municipality, told Swedish Radio. Meanwhile, a migrant duo from Eskilstuna behind the YouTube account Alpha and Ali posted a video several days ago in which they approached random people on the street while pretending to cough while claiming they have coronavirus. Local Social Democrat politician Maria Hindi Alias tweeted, describing the pair as general idiots, while inviting them to try and prank her, promising she'll be nice, before vowing to call their parents and inform them that they have raised two full-scale idiots. As of Tuesday morning, Sweden has a reported 4,000 cases of coronavirus infection, resulting in 146 deaths. Well, they want more than talking to their parents, don't they? I mean, they should be given jail terms for this. They should be given years for doing this, trying to infect people. I believe that's actually a part of the act that the coronavirus act that they've just brought in Britain, is that they can give out these long jail terms to people that deliberately try to infect others, because we have been seeing this. There are a lot of videos online, particularly of Chinese licking or spitting on things, spitting on lift buttons, on fruit, wiping snotty tissues on the back of seats, all this sort of thing. And of course, you have to be wary of this. You have to think, well, are people just, you know, just deliberately highlighting this to make the Chinese look bad and just sort of increase things? But the date stamps do look like they were taken recently. And in some of them, like in, there's one in Australia, it's actually got the police there that are arresting them for doing this. So this is a phenomenon of migrants trying to infect others with this disease. Sweden is not alone when it comes to distasteful coronavirus-themed pranks, however, as similar instances of attention whoring have appeared online as Generation Z tries to outdo itself in the middle of a pandemic, all for the sake of staving off boredom. Irish police have made several arrests after youths were caught coughing on or spitting at members of the general public in what Ireland's Health Minister Simon Harris described as disgusting and pathetic behaviour. Again, we'd have to check to see what ethnicity these youths are, but the fact that they're using the term youths and not showing us pictures of them kind of implies that they're migrants. Now, as I mentioned, we've got this Corona Act that we now have in place in Britain, and there's been a lot of concern about this. The first time I heard about it was actually a message from Dennis Wise that he sent me. I'm not sure who sent it to him, but having looked through the act myself, it does look correct. The commenter says, "The emergency coronavirus bill will be rushed through as law. Today sees the second reading. If passed, it will immediately proceed to third and on. It contains the most draconian powers ever proposed in peacetime Britain. It will be rushed through Parliament, and the powers will last for 2 years. The powers will affect your freedom and take away your rights. Forced detention and isolation can be of anyone, including children, and for any amount of time. Authorities can forcibly take biological samples from your body. There is no clear access to legal rights from as yet unidentified isolation facilities. The powers will last for up to 2.5 years. Lockdown powers could prevent protests against these measures. State surveillance safeguards have been weakened. Protections from forced detainment and treatment under the Mental Health Act have been lowered. Cremations can be enforced against personal and religious wishes. There have been changes to the court system and to the registration of deaths. No inquests will be held into suspicious deaths. No requirement for any medical certification for burials or cremations. It also indemnifies the health service should they fail for whatever reason to provide care. And the most frightening part, only one medical officer is required to sign off compulsory treatment orders, which means in the real world you can be forced to accept medication or held down and injected with whatever is seen fit." And this commenter believes that that is the biggest and worst threat to our freedoms. That's Schedule 8, Part 1. Now, obviously, you can't really get away with not actually giving them these powers with the threat that we are facing. But there is a huge potential for abuse, and it's not just truth seekers that are pointing this out. Civil liberties group Big Brother Watch has warned that the coronavirus bill, published today, contains the most draconian powers in peacetime Britain and urged close scrutiny from parliamentarians. The campaign organisation warned that the coronavirus bill empowers police, immigration officers and public health officials to demand documentation, detain and isolate members of the public, potentially indefinitely, including children, and forcibly take biological samples for testing. It permits prohibition of public events and gatherings without the standard protections for strikes and industrial action that exist in the Civil Contingencies Act of 2004. It weakens safeguards on the exercise of mass surveillance powers by quadrupling the time review limits for urgent warrants. The Civil Liberties Organisation warned that some of the sweeping powers are unprecedented, unexplained, and simply unjustified. Big Brother Watch has questioned whether relaxation of protections on mass surveillance powers could signal that the powers could be used more extensively during the pandemic. countries including Israel and China have reportedly used phone tracking to enforce quarantine restrictions on people suspected of infection with COVID-19. News reports this evening suggested that O2 has been asked by the government to hand over anonymous mobile phone location data in order to ensure people are following social distancing guidelines. However, phone location data is rarely truly anonymous. Big Brother Watch demanded an explanation from government, and they don't appear to have had one, but the director of Big Brother Watch, Silky Carlo, said, "It is right that government is taking rapid and robust action to protect public health, but we cannot let basic rights fall casually to this crisis. Our country faces challenges best when we hold on to our values, not abandon them. The bill contains blank check powers to detain and test potentially infectious members of the public and even children in unidentified isolation facilities on threat of criminal sanctions. That could be any one of us. It contains sweeping powers to shut down even political assemblies, which could thwart the possibility of public protest against this power grab in the months ahead." Don't forget, this goes on for 2.5 years. "These breathtaking powers demand utmost caution, the closest scrutiny and the strictest time limitations. Many of the powers are unprecedented, unexplained, and simply unjustified. The 2-year duration of the Act has not been justified and is totally out of step with the existing legal standards for emergency regulations. This is no time for parliamentarians to abdicate their vital function of scrutiny. These extraordinary powers risk permanently rebalancing the relationship between citizens and the state. This crisis requires the public's courage and cooperation, not our criminalisation. These are the most draconian powers ever proposed in peacetime Britain, and they require urgent review and reform." And, I mean, the reason why, of course, is because if this does get solved within the next 3 months, for the next 2 years, they can still use these powers. They can prevent people from protesting. They can just lock people up without habeas corpus. As I pointed out earlier, people could be bumped off, and they could just say, well, there's no need for a coroner's report. No need to investigate because they might have had coronavirus. There's all sorts of abuses that are possible with this. And of course, this won't just be happening in Britain. There will be a bill like this, exactly like this, I should imagine, that they'll be using in America, that they'll be using in Germany. And as I pointed out earlier, it's only Sweden that hasn't actually done this. So this does need looking into. And of course, the government do need powers like this for this crisis that we're in, but we have to watch very carefully that they don't start abusing them. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.